for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. Today we are covering...
Wait, who am I? Who are you?
Who am I?
Who are we? What is Growing Up Skywalker?
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker, your podcast where a newbie, Anna... That's you.
Oh, I thought you were saying you were the newbie because we're 160 episodes in and we forgot how we introduced the episode.
Well... You're still a Star Wars newbie to me. So, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
I know a lot about Star Wars.
And I know nothing. Head empty, no thoughts, just Mon freaking Mothma,
yeah,
my friends.
We know who Mon Mothma is. So anyway, we're doing Season 3, Episode 18, Secret Cargo, and Season 3, Episode 19, Double Agent Droid.
Yeah, tell me about Secret Cargo and Mon Mothma saying some incredibly ballsy BS about the Empire.
So the Ghost Crew is vibing on wreckage. I mean, apparently this is going on concurrently with the stuff on Crow Nest because this is what the rest of the crew is doing. So they're vibing in the Ghost and a probe comes by. They're waiting for a Secret Cargo from the Rebellion to arrive. They're watching the news and on the news, Mon Mothma is like, "The Emperor has genocided the Gorman people. He is an executioner, and I won't take it anymore." And they're like, "This traitor's gotta go." Meanwhile, a Imperial probe droid being piloted by the same type of droid from Warhead of this season is coming by and shining the lights on them and does, in fact, make them and starts the counter for the Empire showing up.
So Hera and Zeb and Ezra and Chopper have been waiting around to refuel some extremely highly classified, extremely important rebel cargo from Gold Squadron. So that's why they're floating around in space. Mm-hmm. They are compromised, and that is very, very bad for this classified mission.
So the mission begins because Gold Squadron shows up. It's 5 Y-wings and 1 big chunky cruiser kind of transport thing. And also, the Empire shows up because this probe droid made them out. So, an attack ensues. As it does, the Ghost is connected to this transport, and one of the Y-Wing pilots is knocked out. And Ezra takes the wheel and is in this Y-Wing, and they start fighting, and they make it, but they're going to have to take a really scary route. So, Hera's like, we'll go through this nebula because the Empire will never suspect it. Cut to Thrawn, who's like, "Ah, yes, Hera Syndulla. She'll take the crazy route."
Through the nebula where stars are made,
yes.
Not Disney stars.
So importantly, the cargo is revealed to be none other than former Senator Mon Mothma. And so she is now aboard the Ghost and Ezra is aboard a Y-Wing. So Thrawn says, "Price and Constantine, why don't you park your Star Destroyers on the other side of this nebula? I'm going to send my new secret project under Commandant Volt Scaris to go mess it up. We'll meet them in the middle. We'll kill them. We'll capture them. Whatever. I'll leave it up to you guys and your, you know, various competencies." And so, entering into the nebula, they're being chased by 1 light cruiser and a TIE Defender and 2 TIE Interceptors. The TIE Defender, you'll recall, was the secret information from the factory on Lothal. And we get to see it for the first time. It has sort of 3 TIE interceptor wings on it. It is scary as heck. It is the main boss of a X-Wing game. It starts ravaging them. It kills a bunch of Y-Wings. And Hera has to dive into closer and closer to these burning stars to rip the panels off of her own ship to make the TIE fighters fly off. However, the TIE Defender is still chasing her.
Well, it explodes them.
Yes, so 2 of the TIE Interceptors explode. The TIE Defender is still chasing them. Ezra and John Dutch Vander, Gold Leader, are playing cat and mouse in this pea soup nebula flying around. Ezra is like, "All right, I'm going to get it to chase me right in front of your guns. Shoot when I tell you." Vander manages to shoot it with his ion cannon, which disables the defender, and it flies off into the void. And they're like, all right, we got to catch up with Hera. Meanwhile, Hera has come to the other side of the nebula, and there's two Star Destroyers, and their engines are shot because of flying through the nebula. And so Mon Mothma's like, I'm going to just hit them with a wall of legalese and demands and try to stall for time while Hera comes up with a plan to escape. Hera does not have a plan to escape. The good guys come out of the nebula and they're like, all right, two Y-Wings versus two Star Destroyers. Let's go. This is what we were made for. And Hera's like, wait, hold up. Remember how previously I warned you that you can't use your proton torpedoes because you'll ignite the nebula? And they're like, uh-huh. And she's like, ignite the nebula. So they shoot the nebula instead. These massive sunburst nebula flares come by and absolutely ruin the paint and also the entire right side of these Star Destroyers. And the good guys get to escape. They get to the rendezvous on Dantooine. Mon Mothma gives an absolutely inspiring speech about coming together, about how she's ready to go loud. She is no longer standing by the sidelines. She is now on the front lines of this war. And she's calling everyone to come together and fight the Empire.
Yeah, she wants to unite every single discrete rebel cell across the Empire into an alliance.
So we're watching from General Dodonna's squadron. We're watching from Lothal. We're watching from Bail Organa's compound. And a beat occurs because she finishes the transmission. And the ships start flying in. And I cried like a baby.
I'm crying right now.
But like 40 rebel ships fly in. And it all arrives. The rebellion is now formed.
It was beautiful. I cried too. I'm messing up thinking about it. It was amazing. Mon Mothma's amazing.
And that's Secret Cargo.
Oh, it's the rebellion. It's here.
It's here.
Wow. That's not what happens in Double Agent Droid, which is Rebel Season 3, Episode 19. It's a different one.
Well, tell us all about it.
A crack team consisting of Wedge Antilles. This is where the crack team stops. Chopper and AP5 get sent to infiltrate an Imperial base and steal some codes to help with an attack on Lothal. It is all very vague and hand-wavy and relies on incompetent Star Wars file-sharing practices. So anyway, they're piloting a Lambda-class shuttle, question mark?
No, it's a Alpha or a Sentinel.
Ugh, yeah. Bummer. I thought it was a Lambda. They're piloting an Imperial shuttle. They get to the base. Chopper and AP5 unload. However, when Chopper passes through the Imperial security checkpoint, he flags a secret floating ship full of Imperial nerds.
And I think he did it to show off.
What? No.
Because there's this big metal detector, and AP5 walks through it, turns green, he goes inside. And then Chopper goes through it, it does nothing. And then like 15 seconds later, it quietly flashes red, as if he was doing like the showboaty way of hacking through the metal detector.
Fascinating. So these tech bro data wizards, I don't know what to call them, these Imperial nerds.
If you'll recall Sibo from Season 1, they have these big metal headbands, and also Lobot in Empire Strikes Back have these big metal headbands that let them, you know, go directly into the Matrix.
Well, I haven't seen Empire Strikes Back, but I do know Sibo, so that's interesting. Okay, so they see Chopper flag the security checkpoint, and they're like, it's the droid from Grand Admiral Thrawn's memo. They have been infiltrating the Empire all across the galaxy. Find them, because they think that Chopper can lead them back to the Rebel base on Attilon, and then they can tell Thrawn where it is. Finally finishing up this long plot thread from Season 3 of Rebels. So as AP5 waltzes in and steals the clearance codes for Lothal in about 5 seconds, the floating brain trust seizes their opportunity. Chopper spanners into the Imperial network, and they hack into his brain and take him over, and he is Zombie Chop.
Yeah, he's literally just plugging in for fun. And they're like, he's in, let's get him.
Yeah, and then they Muppet him back to the Sentinel-class cruiser where AP-5 and Wedge are waiting. But he's so unlike himself that AP-5 immediately knows something is up. He is like, where is the extremely obnoxious antagonist who bickered with me the entire way over here? Who are you?
They apparently did a... No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can.
For 5 hours.
For hours.
And now he's like calling AP-5 sir. And AP-5 is the smartest droid around and knows something is up. So when they rendezvous with Hera to give her the clearance codes, she's like, AP-5, I think you're right. There's something seriously wrong with Chopper. And that is when he locks them in the cargo bay of the Ghost and disconnects the Sentinel-class cruiser and begins to install a data spike on the Ghost to suck out all of their data.
Because Chopper, doesn't have the coordinates for Atalon, but it's on the Ghost. And so he plugs in one of those long-term data spikers to get it from the Ghost's navicomputer.
So as the data spike is installing into the Ghost and beginning to transmit data back to the brain trust, AP-5 has to magnet boot himself along the hull of the Ghost to try to override the controls from outside, get the Spectres free from the cargo bay. But Chopper picks up one pistol per tiny fist and flies out in full murder mode and tackles AP-5 and sends him spinning out into space. And it is sayonara to AP-5. Chop gets back into the Ghost and Zeb has to bow rifle him into submission. And then, like, Ezra whips out the data spike and Hera reverses the feed. So she's transmitting back to the brain trust. And she's like, hey, Sleemos, don't mess with my droid next time. And then she does the most hand-wavy Star Wars space magic bullshiz I've ever seen. She sends enough power back through Chopper to explode the Imperial spy ship.
I could hand wave that. I could technobabble that.
No, it was amazing. Yeah, it was just ridiculous.
They just explode. Like, all of their consoles were like, oh, no. Because they're all very flat and emotionless. And they're like, oh, no, our consoles are exploding. It is funny.
And then they explode.
Yeah.
And then this entire time, they're like, yay, great job, Chop. Great job, AP-5. And AP-5 has been floating out into the galaxy, finally a moment without chaos, without disorganization. Beautiful space bat babies fly up to him. He begins to sing. Life is so beautiful. He is happy. And then the Ghost comes and scoops him up.
No, no.
And he is back to the blessed mess that is the Rebellion.
Oh, yes.
And that is double secret cargo agent droid.
9,000. Yeah.
Whoa. What a contrast.
So this is why I insisted we put Andor earlier.
Oh, no, you were 100% right. Mm-hmm.
And now when Andor season 2 comes out, we're going to have the whole jumbled timeline. But honestly, that's going to happen anyway because of Bad Batch and Tales of the Empire, which is coming out in like 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, we're finally hitting that point in the podcast that I hoped that we would never hit where stuff is coming out previously on Star Wars that we didn't get to cover chronologically. And that is a bummer. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to figure out where we're going to fit it in.
But, so apparently after the events of Andor, Mon Mothma, because it's actually talked about a bunch in Andor, is the Massacre of the Gorman.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to start with Secret Cargo?
Sure do.
Okay. Secret Cargo is not only one of the most visually beautiful episodes of Rebels yet, it is a big deal.
It's a huge deal to have like a full senator on the outs who... So we had Gal Travis earlier, but he was like a rogue senator and he was kind of clickbaity. You know, he's like, these are the things the Empire doesn't want you to hear. And it was always like halfway there. Mon Mothma has been a thorn in the side of the Empire forever. And now she's like, it's time. I'm getting people together. They declared me a traitor and I'm still alive, which is cool.
Yeah, so let's talk about last time we saw Mon. She was on Coruscant. She was fencing stuff for Luthen. Mm-hmm. She was setting up her family like chess pieces. She was setting up Perrin Mothma, her husband, to take the fall for 400,000 credits, which she lost track of as she was funneling her family fortune to the rebellion. And she has set him up to be a sacrificial lamb to go down so she can keep her traitorous bank account safe.
Also, she was maybe setting up her daughter with the son of the richest man on Chandrila.
Davos Skuldan.
Yeah, so that she could have access to a lot more money.
And preparing to lose Lita to child bridehood, yes.
And her, you know, unstable lesbian war leader cousin was like on Ferrix when things went down on Ferrix. So, yeah.
Yeah, so she was an outwardly respectable, I think she calls herself a gadfly in Andor. Mm-hmm. She's like, I am a harmless, well-intentioned, naive senator who keeps trying to run around putting out the fires that the Empire is starting. On the inside, I am a cool, hard, implacable rebel leader. And now she is flying through a forming star, no family, no more Senate career, no more refuge, no more hiding.
Just the clothes on her back.
Uniting the galaxy from the front lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened?
Well, hopefully Andor season two talks about that because it would make sense for, it's been prophesized. It's been foretold. It's been leaked that it's going to cover a period of years and lead right up to the moments of Rogue One, which means that it's kind of taking place parallel timeline to Rebels. And so that means at some point they're going to have to be like, and here's Mon Mothma joining with the Ghost Crew. So later, Mon. M plot is now done. Although maybe then we'd get a live action Rebels era Rebel adaptation, which would be fun as hell.
Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing.
Just for like a scene or two.
So the Gorman Massacre, Mon was talking about it all through Andor season one.
Yes.
Now it seems like it is some kind of incentivizing event. But yeah. Why does it stand out from any other Imperial massacre? We've seen a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, especially because in Andor, there's that torture scene where they're like, we had to kill all the people on this planet. And as retribution, they sang us a song and we used it to torture people that they tortured Bix with.
Mm.
And so, like, maybe it's because of like the Gorman were one step too far, or maybe because it was like a cause that Mon Mothma had spent a lot of time in and like gotten enough people in because she has been fighting this whole time. Or maybe she's actually still a rebel leader and she's like, hey, I needed to go. So this is my like resignation letter as I'm airing everyone's dirty laundry. Peace out.
Mm.
Like maybe she had, maybe she's gets a message from like Vel. It's like, you're made. Like you need to leave by, you know, before the cops arrive. And she's like, the Gorman Massacre, Palpatine's an exterminator, a billion other things. Check out my, you know, WikiLeaks. As she's getting dragged to her like speedy transport out of town.
Interesting. You know?
But I guess we'll find out in Andor season two what changed.
So maybe, even though we will probably find out in Andor season two, maybe we can spitball a little bit because I'm curious why you, with all of your Star Wars knowledge.
So much.
Why do you think Mon Mothma would decide that this is the moment to unite the rebellion?
Well, I think three things. One is maybe it was the right moment for her. Another is that maybe this was the bridge too far for her. And the other one was that maybe now the rebellion's ready. You know, now they're ready to start doing stuff, to start making action. Maybe she's sitting here and she's talking with Bail and she's talking with Luthen. And she's like, so what does this look like? And they're like, we would love to have politicians at this point. We actually have enough battleships and destroyers. We have enough starfighters and starfighter pilots. We have enough ground troops. We kind of need people to start negotiating between these disparate groups with something softer than Luthen holding a blaster to your head.
Yeah.
or bullying you into keeping your ISB job.
Oh my God. Sam and I have been rewatching Andor in the evening. So this is all very, very fresh.
Yeah.
And it is so interesting because now they are, the rebellion is flush with cash, but severely lacking in vocal leadership.
And like, people who are good at that type of leadership, because you can be Hera and you can lead a bunch of things. But when it comes down to like sitting down at the rebel war table and saying, okay, how do we allocate resources to continue this fight? Cool. Hera's probably quite good at that. Sato's good at that. But then you get down to what rules of engagement? What are our targets to hit? What is our strategic aim? Who do we need to liberate? Who is worth more? And who do we, you know, think is a collaborator? Like, who do we decide to favor in the, like, who do we promise future representation in exchange for a bunch of starfighters? That's somewhere you need, like, a politician.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I think that Luthen as a spy master and Hera as a general and Sato as an admiral are people who are like, I kind of need politicians to make these decisions because I would probably promise too much and get too little. And also, these are all warriors. And you need someone who's like, I need to get in touch with the Bothans for spies. I need to get in touch with the Mon Cala for ships. I need to do all these things to organize this rebellion above and beyond war.
Interesting. Yeah, the rebellion needs bureaucrats because the Empire is so rich with them.
Yeah, so they have plenty available, but yeah.
Huh. So Mon is their token bureaucrat.
I think more than that in both directions. I think she's a well-respected leader who a lot of people are like, she has ideological purity. Like, she was part of the system. She's a link to the way it used to be. And a lot of the people who are part of the rebellion are there to restore the Republic. In fact, that's the formal name of the rebellion, is the Alliance to Restore the Republic.
Interesting. I wonder how Saw Gerrera takes that.
Well, he's not part of it, right? And all these people he talked about are like, that's what he's saying. He's like, the neo-separatist, the human cultist, the sectorist, only I have clarity of purpose, because he's an anarchist. And so you need someone like Mon Mothma who gets all those people together and who decides who's in and out. And Saw Gerrera would never have any part of that because he would never be a part of a club that would have him as a member. So
he's just not a joiner.
He's not a joiner.
I love that you talk about Mon's ideological purity, because over the last couple of episodes, we've been talking about Sabine really inhabiting the phoenix imagery of rising from flames. But this episode, Secret Cargo, I mean, I just never imagined we would get such a visceral phoenix metaphor in Rebels. I mean, Mon Mothma is flying through forming stars, flying through flames, like coming out the other side with nothing, with no family, with no ties, with no money,
just luggage.
No luggage, no passport. And like, she's coming out the other side ready to unite every rebel in the galaxy. And it felt like she was flying through fire to remove the impurities of her past, right?
Because
did you get that?
I did not, but now I do. I got shivers because that is so true, that she has had to give up all the trappings she had before. And her first combat experience is about as close to death as the Ghost has ever gotten. And then it rolls in. There's two Star Destroyers. She's probably like, oh, you probably destroyed those all the time. But then she's probably like, wait a minute, I see how often Star Destroyers are destroyed. That's a big deal. And she doesn't bat an eye.
Yeah. And just think, every scene of Mon Mothma in Andor, she is boxed in. She's boxed in by her house. She's boxed in by her car. We never see her in the open air. And Vel even says to her as they're parting ways in one of the Andor episodes, I'm worried about you trapped in here. And now we're getting this episode of Mon just burning away all of her trappings and emerging into the wide, wide galaxy. And it is at her fingertips.
Yeah.
It is the Phoenix Rising. That is Mon Mothma.
It sure is.
Wow. I've got shivers.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of burning away everything other than the core self and then being like, all I have left is the mission on the other side.
All I've got left is Namek's manifesto.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. That's why I loved Secret Cargo. I thought it was gorgeous.
I mean, I just cried at the end because it's a good speech. And then, like, pulling together the whole Rebel cell. And there's ships I recognize, you know?
You cried about the TIE Defender.
No, the TIE Defender was, like, it's a very cool ship. And this is the first time we've seen it on screen because previously when we saw Volt Scaris, he yeeted all those guys out of existence with just a TIE Interceptor. And the TIE Interceptors can't even hang in the nebula. Mm. It's the TIE Defender that has hyperspace. It's got shields. It's got cannons. And it is ready to solo the entire mission. It's ravaging them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ezra says, I know that ship. Mm-hmm. So I guess I thought it was the ship from earlier in Rebels where they infiltrate the Imperial factory on Lothal.
Well, that is where they got the information. And he probably looked at the blueprints. And then, like, looking at the blueprints, he's like, oh, dear. I am flying someone else's Y-Wing. The seat's in the wrong position. And I have to go fight this thing.
Yikes, yikes, yikes.
Yeah, it's fun seeing Ezra fly a Y-Wing, and John Vander he's actually a backport from A New Hope. Mm. He's a named character in A New Hope.
I was getting the sense that we were porting a bunch of original trilogy era stuff into this episode. It was fun to see Ezra kind of come up against the stick-up-their-butt Gold Squadron and just earn everyone's respect immediately.
Yeah, well, he does it like Jedi style, you know, because he's like, I'll just fly in front of your guns. Like, how will I miss you? And he says, if Scaris can't hit me, you can't. Because he's sitting there using the Force to avoid, you know, shots and everything. So it's a fun episode. It leverages, so if you were in a big stellar nebula in Universe Prime here, you would genuinely not know. Like, it doesn't really
affect.
Yeah, it is so less dense. It's not pea soup fog. If you were inside the sun, it would not be pea soup fog like that.
Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So this pea soup fog is very much a... it calls to mind, actually, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, because there is a delightful scene in that one where the Reliant and the Enterprise are zooming past each other with no visibility in a pea soup nebula, and it's evocative of a submarine movie. And that's, like, what this is supposed to be, is like a submarine scene. And we saw really good nebula fights in the Destroy the Malevolence arc early in the Clone Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. The first 10 episodes of the Clone Wars,
I think. The first, like, 3 episodes of the Clone Wars, which is funny. They're like, we have a super weapon. We blew it up. Moving on. 7 more seasons. But that's not how nebulas work. But it's how they work in Star Wars. And that makes it really fun that, like, you knock a ship away and it's just gone once it's 50 feet away.
Yeah. Burned up. I loved it.
Yeah. It speaks to mind more of the complications of the inspiration for Star Wars dogfights, which is like World War I and World War II dogfights, where, like, someone will fly into the clouds and they're just gone. Or they came out of the clouds. They came from behind. They came out of the sun. It's fun.
That's rad.
Yeah, it is rad. And we'll see what happens with this Defender. Just one of them was a big threat.
It was horrifying. I guess the last thing that I wanted to talk about, at least with Secret Cargo, was, so presumably Mon Mothma sends out hyperspace coordinates. Like, hey, if you are interested in answering my call to action, please arrive here. Mm-hmm. How many Rebel cell leaders do you think we got?
On screen, we see 3 cells. Based off of ships, I estimate 4 more because I am a huge nerd. And I recognized Home One.
Ooh.
And I recognized Nebula B frigates that I don't think are part of Dodonna's squadron, and I don't think they're part of Organa's stuff. And we saw all of Phoenix Cell.
And we don't think Saw's coming.
Didn't see Saw. We know what Saw's ships look like. We know that he paints his X-Wings black, which is cool.
Okay, so 7 Rebel cells plus Phoenix Squadron.
Yeah, or maybe more, because if you had Iron Squadron, you know, actually being run by an adult, then instead of being like a Lord of the Flies situation, you'd have like someone like that would be like, ah, yes. And where is Mon Mothma sending us to? Secret location, coordinate C63 Alpha. Cool. We'll meet there. We're showing up. We are answering the call because we're a rebel. And you have like random smugglers who are like, yeah, we're answering the call.
Oh my gosh, it's the hero's journey. They're answering the call.
Yeah.
Oh, that feels like an echo to the end of Andor when Cassian finally answers the call.
Yeah. Well, it's also an echo to the end of season one when Ezra sends out his message. And like that is actually called back in this because Gold Two is like, you're Ezra Bridger. I know who you are. You blew up Tarkin's Star Destroyer, caused a whole huge ruckus. It was a big mess for the rest of us. And Zeb is like, yeah, we definitely blew up a Star Destroyer.
And yeah, and the comms tower on Lothal.
But the, well, the Empire did that. But the idea of at the end when Fulcrum shows up and they realize they're part of a larger cell. This is that moment. This is the Fulcrum shows up to rescue you. You are part of something larger moment for everyone.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, secret cargo is such a big deal that I'm a little confused why it was before Double Agent Droid. But maybe we'll talk about Double Agent Droid and I'll get some clarity.
Let's do it. So Double Agent Droid is silly. it's a silly episode. AP5 is narrating to himself the whole time. And he is like, I don't even know why they sent 2 droids. I could have done this whole thing by myself.
Literally, yes.
And yeah.
He is correct.
As soon as AP5 and Chopper start arguing, Wedge is like, ah, I see why I was put on this mission. Because no one else wanted it. It's funny. This is a very funny episode, and it is a breather episode because secret cargo, heavy. Twin Suns, super heavy. That's the next episode.
Okay.
And so we're taking a breather.
Okay.
But it also moves the plot along in 3 significant ways. One is that now they have the like gate controls to Lothal so they can sneak in easier.
That's what they wanted?
That's what they're stealing, yeah.
Okay, it was very confusing. First, they were like, we need the codes. And then they were like, we need the clearance codes. And I'm like, okay, but for what?
Yeah, apparently it's for, like, the Lothal defense grid or something. So they're going to be able to fly right into Lothal.
I guess one plot thread this season, and then we can get back to the other ways that this episode advances the entire plot. Mm-hmm. But one of the plot threads from this season that has confused me is how often the Spectres are trying to get back to Lothal. Because they decided in season 2 that they are part of the Galactic Rebellion. They are no longer just a Lothal-based cell. But they keep trying to get back to Lothal. Is it because of the factory?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a major Imperial factory. They know that the factory is pumping out TIE defenders. They know that Thrawn is capable of using these TIE defenders to really harry the rebellion. Because the rebellion, we see in Secret Cargo, these Y-Wings roll up. They form up. Ezra's part of them. And it's like, please take out this cruiser. And they're like, cruiser, be gone. Y-Wings are good enough. But then they get demolished by this TIE defender.
So we saw a TIE Defender in action in order to set up how important it is for them to destroy the Imperial factory on Lothal?
Yep.
That TIE Defender was so scary.
And the factory on Lothal is pumping them out, and it's Thrawn's base of operations. And it's probably doing a bunch of other stuff. It's probably making Star Destroyers and whatnot. But it takes so much effort to spool up a factory, and they're relatively delicate. That being able to get in and ravage a factory on a planet would do a lot for the rebellion. And although it does result in, you know, collateral damage, civilian casualties, it is also safer for the rebellion. Like, you can destroy Star Destroyers either when they're 90% built and not turned on yet, or when they're fully armed and operational and ready to ravage your butt. In which case, the only thing that'll save you is if Admiral Constantine is flying them, because that man is a wet noodle.
Okay, so that's one reason why this was strategically important.
Yes.
What are the other two?
The factory, that it is Thrawn's base of operations. And I don't even know if they know this. This is like an unknown known that they have, which is that Thrawn really wants these TIE Defenders. Like, and if Thrawn wants something, you should stop him from having it. And it's like, it's probably the strategic command. It's the strategic point where the Empire is strongest, in the Midrim. Right there.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a big deal. It's not attacking Coruscant, but going after Lothal is a huge deal for the rebellion. It's a huge deal to hurt the Empire and cause problems. It's not the quarterly payroll for an entire sector like the Aldani heist. It's probably a million times as big, as impactful, if you could take out that factory.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
I will say, I thought in Secret Cargo, when Gold Squadron was being so annoying about their cargo, I was like, oh, they're carrying the credits from the Aldani heist. Turns out Mon Mothma is worth more than 80 million credits, which is fascinating. But back to the factory on Lothal, the sticky bit about this is that Thrawn knows how important Lothal is to the Spectres.
Mm-hmm.
He has been diverted once again from discovering the location of the Rebel base on Attilon, but he knows that the Spectres originated on Lothal.
And fortunately, that's because of the utter incompetence of the Brainiacs.
Wait.
Yeah, because the Brainiacs learn this. So here's the information that the Brainiacs have, and their little stupid Gazanti with extra spooky dishes just all over. It's kind of cool. They're like, we have learned that they're going after Lothal. However, we're not going to report this in because I want a promotion, so I'm going to find the Rebel base. And then they're like, we have 50% of the coordinates for the Rebel base, but we haven't sent it in yet. And then they all die. So they learned two valuable pieces of information and did nothing with them.
Well, that is why this plot is made possible by Star Wars space magic science and terrible file sharing capabilities, which is a delight and I love it. And it is a plot mechanism with a rich history in Star Wars. So it's not like this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
It's just, it feels like the longer we push off Thrawn finding out where the base is, the worse it's going to be when he does.
Correct.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Lots of fun.
Yeah. Well, I guess it is unfortunate that Sabine loves drawing Lothcats so much, because I feel like that's what twigged Thrawn onto everything.
We will find out. It'll be a real finale when that happens. But what we're left with is this picture of Thrawn is still hot on their tail. It's been this way the whole time. So they're never safe, but they are still growing and they are still thriving and they are still causing a ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
I did appreciate watching these two episodes contrasted with the last two episodes, because I'm like, man, I haven't seen Zeb or Ezra or Hera in like two episodes. And now we don't see Kanan or Sabine or Fennera for two episodes. So that's what's up. It's happening simultaneously.
The last icky bit, and this is not really important, I don't think, unless you tell me it is important later.
It's important.
But the brain trust, you made a reference to SIBO from earlier on in Rebels. I think this was late Rebels season one, where SIBO was one of the people who gave up some of their autonomy and neurological function to put on a headset owned by the Empire, who then harnessed their data crunching and hacking abilities.
Yeah.
So we're seeing the culmination of that in the floating Imperial Nerds Gazanti class cruiser.
Yeah, yeah.
My question, and I'm sure I asked this back in season one, but I have now forgotten what we talked about and I want to ask it again. Can computers not do that? Can droids not do that?
I mean, Star Wars technology, I postulated a theory, I feel like it was a long time ago, that it seems to me that anything more complex than a toaster kind of develops sentience in the Star Wars universe, which is why, like, there's a droid whose job it is to be the stairs for every ship, and there's, like, droids who just run around doing inventory. There's droids for everything, and droids seem to perhaps be like a personification of the way programming languages work. Because when we, as humans on Universe Prime here, tell a computer what to do, it will do exactly what we tell it to do. Mm-hmm. The problem is we are bad at giving directions that are specific enough for a computer to follow. And like a droid is probably the same thing where it's like, and then, you know, hand wave the rest of it. And then the droid is like, cool, I don't work for you anymore. Like you fool, you gave up your control over me in exchange for XYZ. And so it very much seems like for some reason or another in the Star Wars universe, they just don't have to work at the technology of things to make things work nearly as well. And that's why, and that means that everything's basically human powered.
I guess also on Narkeena 5 in Andor, one of the prisoners has a throwaway line where he says, yeah, this Imperial facility of 5,000 human prisoners is cheaper to maintain than droids.
Yeah.
So, okay. Slaving humans to your computer is cheaper than building and maintaining droids to do the same thing?
Or slaving humans to cyborgize them also gives you the best of both worlds. They're as cheap as humans, but they have some of the processing capacity of droids and the pattern matching and the data access. Because what it really comes down to, it appears to come down to me as a observer with some technical knowledge, is that there's just not good data visualization in the Star Wars universe. No one has good access to seeing things. Everything is like scrolled out on a teletype and there's a bunch of switches and occasionally you can get to see a blueprint of something. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I just have no idea what would cause that type of thing to work unless their entire way of like developing a data structure is inside out and backwards. But
that tracks.
Yeah, it does track.
My last fun fact is that the nerd leader of the cyborg unit was designed to look like Pablo Hidalgo.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because he is the repository of all Star Wars knowledge, and this guy was like the repository of all cyborg knowledge and Imperial data.
You know what I noticed about both of these episodes is that up until now, we've had a lot of faceless rebels.
Yes.
And every rebel had a face. And every cyborg nerd had a face. Each one had a separate face. And that was pretty cool. It felt like we're really moving towards something.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
And there's the hero, AP5, who his little song at the end is so funny.
It's so Disney.
Okay. So AP5 is floating in space, singing just in the stars. Like, oh, it's so quiet out here.
It's like a galactic meadow.
No one is yelling at me. And these little luminescent Nibres start flying around him.
Like he's a Disney princess.
Do you think that those were real?
Ooh, you think they were a hallucination?
Okay.
No, I think AP5's Disney princess magic is so strong that it magnetically attracted these Nibre eel babies to him to give him a beautiful final moment before his batteries ran out in space.
Because I worry that those little Nibres are similar to Minox, where they just want electricity and they'll get it wherever they can.
They were going to vampire bat him.
Vampire bat him. So I kind of hope they were a hallucination.
That's so funny. I love AP5's little song.
It's cute.
He deserved that 5-minute vacation.
Yeah.
His life is so hard. He is so put upon. He is the hero of Double Agent Droid, and for what? He saved the Rebellion's bacon.
He did. And one of the funny things about that episode is the nerds are like, we don't recognize that other droid, but we should flag it as, you know, sus. And it's like, AP5's been part of the Rebellion for like 6 months, you guys. Like,
he is even more sus.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's perhaps why Thrawn is always, like, angry, because he's like, yes, everyone must sign in to come into my office. And they're like, how dare you ask us to follow basic security procedures?
And AP5 is like, everyone's sloppy. Yeah. I'm the only non-sloppy person around.
You know, in a way, that is what makes Andor feel perhaps a little bit less like Star Wars, is that, like, they are actually, the security is actually good.
Deidre Mira runs a tight ship, my friends.
She does, but maybe she's the only competent one. Or maybe there's, you know, you go into the ISB boardroom and you're like, all right, in all honesty, now that the game's up, how many of you are defectors for the Rebels and how many of you work for the Empire? It's like half and half. It's like, Whoa. Okay, so this is why we never got anything done.
Well, would you like to float towards picking your favorite character these episodes?
Yeah, who's our Disney princess?
Who is the Disney princess? That's what I want to know.
All right.
Inquiring minds.
It's time for Baywatch.
It's time for Baywatch.
All right. Who is your bae for these episodes?
Sam, I'm not pulling any punches. I'm not making any surprise decisions over here.
Okay.
It is Mon Mothma Phoenix Rising for me.
Ooh, fun.
She is my Disney princess.
Good choice.
Literally, because Andor, you know, came out in the Disney era.
So did this. Yeah.
She's my Disney princess.
There you go.
I love her. I wish her hair was as good as Genevieve O'Reilly's in Andor, and I wish her wardrobe was as stunningly beautiful as Genevieve O'Reilly's in Andor, but I can ignore all of this because she is inspirational. She is getting a taste of the action. She's not an action senator in the tradition of action Padme.
I mean,
but who could be? Padme really broke the mold.
See, Padme kind of lost her true calling of being a spy.
100%.
Space James Bond.
But Mon Mothma is filling an entirely different mold of fearless leader and uniter and alliance builder. And that is inspirational to me on so many levels. And she is a powerful leader. Oh my God, I didn't think I was going to cry about this, but like women in power, right? Women who get power do good with it.
Yeah.
Oh no. Okay. I'm going to be over here putting tears back in my eyeballs. Who's your bae?
I'm going to choose Ezra.
Ooh.
Yeah. For his awesome flying in Secret Cargo, which helps unify the Rebellion at this ground level. And I think it's a bookend, it's a mirror to what Mon Mothma is doing. Mon Mothma is pulling together the leaders. She's pulling together the Saws and the Heras. And Ezra's down there with Gold Leader.
Ooh.
And he's like, fist bumps. Like, we had each other's back. We blew a bunch of stuff up. Good work.
He's like, uniting from below. He's the grassroots leader.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they say. Gold Leader's like, you can be my wingman anytime.
Ooh.
Which is actually a real compliment, and it really unifies these things, and it kind of ties the whole thing together, because Ezra's like, hey, I stole that Y-Wing. But he's also, he did good as far as bringing together the team, and half of Secret Cargo was about him and Vander's plan to take out that Defender, and it was a scary plan.
Yeah, Ezra's reception at the end of the episode was a far cry from, oh, hey, you're that kid that made our lives really hard a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I feel like Ezra's heroism inspired Gold Squadron to be like, oh, I bet you were in much stickier situations than we realized, and you really did something. And like, we believe you, and we trust in you, and we want to be like you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's real cool.
Yeah. The Rebel Alliance is taking shape and coalescing.
It really, really is.
Ooh. Sam, we have something very special happening next week. Would you like to inform us what it is?
Yes. Next week is Twin Suns.
Rebel Season 3, Episode 20.
And this one's incredibly important for everyone. And for that purpose, we're going to get Tim Beisiegel of the FSF Popcast on to join us for his favorite Rebels episode, one of my favorite Rebels episodes, and hopefully yours as well.
The only thing I know about why this might possibly be Tim's favorite Rebels episode is because Maul is his favorite character, so I would not be shocked if Maul was in this one. Mm. But what do I know? Nothing. Head empty, no thoughts, just Mon Mothma.
You just want her wardrobe.
I just want to be Mon Mothma. Wardrobe included, 100%.
So join us next week for that. In the meantime, join us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. And follow us on Patreon. Guys, we did a book report last week. It was an hour of content.
We read a whole book, and then we did a whole book report for you. It was also for us. It was a soft, beautiful, very loving book.
It was basically a whole big episode of Growing Up Skywalker for something that is, it was like a quintuple header episode with cussing. It was fun. So join us there for that kind of content.
Yeah, we overviewed Claudia Gray's 2019 New York Times bestseller, Master and Apprentice, which is about baby Obi-Wan and babier Qui-Gon, and they are both baby. And I love them.
So join us there. We really appreciate your patronage, and it keeps the lights on. It keeps us in equipment, which is the main thing, because sometimes like XLR cables just die for no reason. So
yeah, you can become one of our supporting members on Patreon for as little as $3 a month. If you don't have that and you still want to support Growing Up Skywalker, boy howdy, there are plenty of ways to do it. Please feel free to drop us 5 stars on your podcast platform of choice. And leave us a little love note and tell the people why you love Growing Up Skywalker. It really helps us to get in the earbuds of new listeners.
And send this episode to someone who's bringing it all together.
Yeah, especially if they have the most beautiful Chandrilin wardrobe ever to exist. Bonus points.
Or they're like, hey, I stole this car 6 months ago.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.